KFNC, Mont Belvieu, Houston, ESPN 97.5.
That's what we call ourselves, sort of like a team.
A Gao Media Station. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Travis Johnson, powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life.
I'm not sure if we are who you thought we were, or you are who they thought we were, but we definitely are not always going to agree. Travis Johnson, Joel Blank here, Nick behind the glass. We are opinionated, and we state our opinions. And for those of you that don't like it when we say that we're right, the only reason why we do it is because we're building up credibility as well, so that people realize when they want the real information and they want answers, they come to the source. That's all we're doing. So we've been talking about this, and we've got plenty of other things to get to. I realize that, but this has been passionate, this whole Texans and Brock, and are you okay with just getting there and all this other stuff as opposed to getting better and making progress. Trav's okay with just getting there, and I'm not. And then, Trav, you said the magic word that's going to stir it up, which is Cowboys.
But here's the thing is,
bring it to me. I'm listening.
That you're not happy with just getting there, but you got to clarify. You'd rather not go there than get there and just get there.
Yeah, you're right. I have to clarify. My issue is, I of course you have to get there to have a shot, and I get that, right? But I need to see progress. I don't want to see the same broken record play out every single year. You learn from your mistakes. You realize where your holes and your weaknesses are, and you work in the offseason to strengthen them, whether that be through the draft or through free agency or through trades. And you progress so that it doesn't keep happening the same way, the same results, the same attitude. Because that attitude, complacency builds complacency. Now, it's okay to just get there. It's okay to just win the division and maybe win one game. That's not okay to me, because to what I see is, if you're good enough to make the playoffs and you're good enough to be in a game in most cases in the playoffs, that means that you're not that far away from being the team that wins a conference title or wins two games in the playoffs. Progress. All I'm asking for is some form of progress. Win two games in the playoffs the next year. Get to the conference championship. I'm not saying you got to win the Super Bowl, but I'm saying you got to show me something that means you're getting better.
If that's the case, then every team fails every year.
Okay, look, Trav, I'm not disagreeing that there's only one team at the end of the year that feels like a success story. I get that, but there's a path that is you are following a path, right? You are creating a path. And every year you take more steps of progress, climbing the ladder to be that team, or at least sniff it.
And I understand that. But here's the thing, is that those guys pick up their check every other week just like you do.
You asked me to clarify, and I'm just saying.
I totally understand that. But those guys, everybody you play against, they pick up their check on every other Tuesday, every other Wednesday, just like you do. And they sit there and they go to practice and they work hard just like you do. I mean, you get certain places they just don't. I mean, you don't think the Browns would rather wish for a 7-9 record?
Right, but Trav, I'm saying, just like I'm saying, if you keep doing 9-7,
Texans are an elite. They're an elite organization with how they operate their business, with how they go about a lot of things. But they're not an elite team. They never have been an elite team.
I was going to say, where are you using elite?
They've never been an elite team.
Absolutely.
This team is...
Wait a minute.
Never. They've never been an elite team.
You don't think the years
never.
When Schaub was at his best...
They were never an elite team.
They were considered one of a handful of elite teams in the NFL.
They were a very good team, and everybody says if they can get over the hump this year, then yes, they have a chance to win the Super Bowl. If they can get over the hump this year, then they have a chance to win the Super Bowl. But they were never, there was no games where anybody ever came to Houston and feared the Texans. There was no games where anybody ever had the Texans come into their place and feared the Texans. When you have the Patriots that go places and people fear them.
Yep. Even when we won 12 games?
Even when you won 12 games. People never feared the Texans.
You were supposed to win a lot more than 12 games that year.
People never feared the Texans. When you look at teams like the Chargers when they had Schottenheimer, when they had North Turner, people feared the Chargers. But they knew, guess what? In the playoffs, they're going to screw it up at some point.
Here's a text. This guy, I think, agrees with Joel. It's not progress when we might squeak into the playoffs this year, and we did last year with 5 different quarterbacks. We're going backwards because we spent millions of dollars, and we're getting the same result.
You spend millions of dollars every year.
Right, but you went, look, you had a revolving door. We've highlighted all this. You had the revolving door. You know, we can go through the dozen or so quarterbacks that have been in a position to try and lead this team. And everybody said, be patient. Everybody said, we're looking for the right guy. Then they finally went out instead of a $5 million 1 or 2 year deal for Fitzpatrick or Hoyer or whoever. You go out and you actually spend because you believe we got the guy. And this is the one that's going to do what we want him to do and push us over the top.
Fitzpatrick wasn't coming back here for a $5 million deal.
I'm not talking about that. I know, but I'm saying they took a shot on all those things. They didn't work out.
Yeah, definitely. And the thing is, if we don't bring him in, then who do we get? Who do we get outside of Paxton Lynch, who still hasn't shown us? Who still hasn't shown us he can play ball? And we still might have the same results. Yes, he's a draft pick, so we would have been a little bit higher on him. We'd have been like, oh, well, you know what? He's only a rookie. He still has time to get better. He still has this. Yeah, we could have done that, but we didn't. So, by us not doing it, you can't sit there and say, well, we spent too much money on a quarterback. The money had to get spent anyway.
They could have just done what they could have bought time again. They could have found 2 guys on the scrap heap to try and be a game manager for another year until there was a guy they were sold on. Or they could have traded up. Or they could have been right where they were and drafted Paxton Lynch. There was plenty of options on the table.
There were plenty of options,
but this was the guy that they were hell bent set on
because they figured, hey, this guy looked good enough for those games. Yeah, and I don't think the product was good enough at the time to give him that kind of money. I've been on record from the beginning of saying that, and I know we got listeners saying, I'm tired of you saying, I told you so. But I told you so. I said I didn't think that he should have. I thought he was good enough to get.
I said there wasn't a big enough sample size either. But it all ropes into the same thing. That's where I'm not okay with complacency setting in and being okay with just winning the division and then folding up your tent and going home again. And when you are going to, and again, this is why I put Rick on the same hot seat I put Bill O'Brien on. It's on you if your middle round draft picks don't make the team and those that do get sent packing because they got caught smoking doobie on the road on a business trip. But then it's also on you that if the sample size wasn't great enough or you didn't have enough info on the guy or depending on who you believe that you didn't even bring him into the facility to talk to him.
But here's the thing:
you didn't do enough due diligence.
Everybody in this league. That's one thing about this league. Everybody's every team for themselves. They don't communicate. But most of these coaches. They all talk. They all communicate. They all talk about how they feel about certain
this
people.
This coach doesn't seem to want to talk to anybody.
They all. I'm willing to bet he's talked to Bill. He talked to Bill Belichick and asked Belichick, "Hey, what do you think about the kid?"
I'm not sure Bill's going to tell you,
but Bill
that's
might
that
not
competitive
tell you,
fire with him.
They talk. That's one thing about this system is they going to have a conversation.
All right. And Steven's been waiting before we get it out of here on this side of it. Steven in Parentland, you want to talk about it? What's up?
Hey, I just heard him say that if Romo didn't get hurt this year, he only had the Cowboys winning 6 games. And me personally, I just thought that was a bit ridiculous. I mean, coming off of 2014.
Are you a Cowboys fan?
I am, yeah.
Well, did I know why you feel like it's ridiculous? I mean, everybody and their mama under the sun all felt like if Tony Romo, because he'd been missing a step. Is nobody knew Dak? Nobody knew Dak Prescott was going to do that. If Dak Prescott if Dak Prescott wasn't doing what he was doing, then no matter how much Zeke is running the ball, y'all still wouldn't have been winning games. So if y'all didn't have a quarterback, and when we had this conversation was after he got hurt the first time, is when I didn't think they were going to win those 6 games. So not knowing that Dak Prescott was going to be Dak Prescott of his college days. Then if there's no quarterback, if you'd have Brandon Whedon as your quarterback or you'd have had Matt Castle as your quarterback, and yeah, Matt Castle won 10 games in Kansas City. But I'm talking about with the Patriots.
Yep.
Yeah, he's it could have been possible. But I didn't see Matt Castle playing well for y'all either. So the fact is if this what this is a phenomenon that has everybody surprised. And y'all as Cowboys
look, Steven, to Travis's defense, the bottom line is for everybody that is a so-called expert in this league, no one had the Cowboys winning that division this year, and no one had them having the season that they're having. So it's like they caught lightning in a bottle, and the guys developed a lot quicker than expected because, yes, Dak Prescott was rated as an NFL quarterback. They just didn't know when he was going to get the opportunity to get there, and everybody knew Ezekiel Elliott was going to be a stud, and with that offensive line, it would have helped. But no one saw the Cowboys doing what they were doing this year.
And I tell people all the time, I will call people a liar to their face. To their face.
Call them
an MF liar to their face if they tell me they believed that what's called was going to happen.
All right, Steven, thanks for the phone call. We appreciate it. I would never call you a liar to your face, and nor you would call me one to mine because of the fact that I don't lie to you.
Because
the fact that I don't lie to you, I'm going to tell you something real good right now, and you might want to take me up on. I'm not going to lie to you when I tell you Infuse Energy is a great energy company locally owned and operated here in Houston, Texas that can take care of your energy needs, whether it be from a business standpoint or residential, and make sure you get the best plan for you and your family or for you and your business. They're not going to try and screw you. They're not going to try and pull the wool over your eyes, and they're always going to be there and be communicative with you if the program isn't set up and isn't working the way you want it to work to make sure that they get a plan. That will. They're not going to be a jerk. They're owned and operated here in Houston, Texas by Josh Pesikoff. Josh is a great dude. Josh is right here in our backyard, and he is here to personally make sure that his business is run with a customer-friendly atmosphere every single day. You call and you got a question, you're going to get a human being that's going to give you an answer. You call and want someone that's going to give you green energy, well, this is 100% green energy at your fingertips. You sign up, you choose a green plan, it'll offset your electricity with use of renewable energy credits, and it helps decreases your carbon footprint. They get you energy at the right price with the right plan to be the right perfect opportunity for your energy needs for you and or your business. InfuseEnergy.com, 844-INFUSE2, 844-463-8732. And every month, just for the simple standpoint that they like to make you laugh, Josh will include a joke inside the bill just to make sure you know he realizes that, you know, you could choose your energy anywhere. He just wants to be friendly, put a smile on your face, give you the best energy possible. Infuse Energy.
Listening to ESPN 97.5. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Travis Johnson, powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life.
It's with great pleasure that I get to do what I'm about to do now and say we've beaten a dead horse long enough now. We can move on to another topic because I think that we've already done that. Because my previous employer, I used to get beat over the back of the head because I can't say anything bad about animals or this or that or the other thing. And it's just great to be able to speak freely amongst my friends and talk about things we want to talk about.
You couldn't talk bad about animals?
Oh, my God, no.
Were they big PETA people?
Oh, yeah.
That sucks.
Yeah, that was a big story. And that's a conversation for many other days. But in the meantime, we covered enough of the Texans, but we got plenty more to talk about, and we really need to get into some college football. And our buddy Carl, who's a big Michigan guy, was obviously very fired up. Carl's also a Redskin fan and started sending me Redskins logos the minute they beat the Packers, which that's like if you know, Florida State played the Badgers and I sent you a couple of big Bucky logos after
but
we won.
But I would understand, though.
But I don't do that. See, because I've always been that guy. I don't talk it whether we win or lose because I've always been through, like you said, the ups and the downs. When the Packers lose, I hurt. When they win, I don't sit there and go, man, we just kicked you and blah, 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 and take that and blah, blah. I just don't do that.
Why not?
Why not? Because I know.
I just don't feel it's right because I've been on both sides. I've taken the loss and known what it's like to get stepped on. But at the same time, I hate to say this, and Benny, don't hate me, because I was the only guy in this room and that room and the listeners were, I told you all Ohio State was going to beat Michigan. I said it.
You did.
Man, Ohio State shouldn't have beat Michigan. Ohio State, they got cheated for one. Everything was all lopsided when it came to the referees, when it came to the calls that were going on. Everything was slanted towards Ohio State. And when Carl just sent what he sent right now, it very much makes me think because I said it the entire game. I don't know if you watched
the
my Twitter feed.
Or the text.
The picture and the text. I mean, the
picture
text.
You can take it at any point.
Yeah, you can take it at any point, and it can look the way you want it to look.
Right.
But the text itself, I don't know if anybody watched my Twitter feed during the game, and the entire time what I was saying is, it looks to me as the Ohio State Michigan the Michigan referees are point shaving. It looks to me once again like that, because they were making pass interference calls on Michigan that they weren't calling on Ohio State of the, and it looked identical in the same places from the same angles that the referees were getting. And then we get this I get this message from Carl. It says the Big Ten officiating crew for the game contained Daniel Capron, lead official, Kevin Schwartzel, back judge, and Bobby Sagers, side judge. Schwartzel is an Athens, Ohio businessman who refs Big Ten games. Normally, they never allow you to do that. No matter where you're from, they don't allow that. He's ref Big Ten games. He's also a lifelong Ohio State fan. Without even taking his fandom into account, he was barred from officiating the 2006, which was the 1-2 game of Michigan-Ohio State game by simply by being from Ohio. Yet he officiated the game yesterday. Sagers is also from Ohio. This year he was inducted into the Ohio High School Sports Hall of Fame, Athletic Hall of Fame, ceremony held where? Columbus, Ohio. And Capron, the field referee, was fired by the Big Ten in 2002 for poor officiating. This right here, it once again slants my whole thinking to the, just like the referees, slanted towards, they were this game was point shaving. This game is, we want Ohio State in this thing, and we want them bad. And now here's my question. Here's my question for you, and I'm going to get off my soapbox in a minute. I'm going to listen.
Please don't. You've been rolling on it today.
And I want the listeners to call in, text in, tweet in. The fact is, Ohio State nor Michigan is playing in the Big Ten title game. So without them having – without them
being – you got to start listening when you're not on the air.
I've
been preaching this damn thing. This is how screwed up the system is. The Big Ten title game is going to feature two teams in a conference, which one of them is going to win it, and neither one of them are going to smell the Final Four.
But
another team from their conference is. Shouldn't happen.
And potentially another two teams.
Yep.
Because depending on what happens next week, Michigan can still get back in the game.
And a lot's going to be a lot's going to be dictated by what happens with the rankings tomorrow night. But the fact of the matter is that Ohio State hung on by the skin of their teeth and moved, they are second.
Yeah, see, that's that.
That's you, where it back. That backs that, what you're saying.
That's the slant towards, once again, the SEC, the Big Ten, certain schools that travel well, that their fans are big money people. They always slant things towards them. ESPN and all them other people, they want to always, and yes, we are a sister station of ESPN, but everybody wants to know, why does this always happen? Because those are the big money teams. And the thing is, you cannot, the reason you held TCU and Baylor out of the playoffs the first year when Alabama won. I mean, when Ohio State, because Ohio State won the first one, right? The reason why you held TCU and Baylor out, mind you now, they could have beat all four teams and beat them handily because those two teams were putting up some points. Why did they get held out? Because the first thing they said was they didn't win their conference. They were tied for their conference title and did not win their title. And that was their standing.
And they didn't have a conference championship.
And they didn't
have
a conference championship. And they didn't have, and they still don't. But that was their standing point on keeping both of those teams out of the playoffs, was because they were tied for the title and they did not win their title. So now what do you do with two teams that aren't even tied for their title and won't win their title?
I mean, look, I don't disagree, but I've been saying all along, and I've been saying that the system is still flawed when you get this very scenario to play out, which is why I wanted to see Ohio State win it, for the very reason that it's not perfect and they're not there yet. For as much as the BCS had tons of flaws and everybody pointed them out, they thought that they had it all figured out with this system.
These are the same flaws.
Yeah, there's no way. And Barry and I talked about it last week, whether you go to six teams or eight teams, but there's got to be a way so that you're not screwing somebody over and or doing what you're saying. Because part of the reason why I said the SEC is down is for that very factor that you're talking about. Because there's so many big-name schools that everybody wants to see in there that they keep giving you every opportunity to still be ranked, to still have a shot, to still be in the discussion until they pee down their legs so bad that their salty socks takes them down to the bottom and out of the top 25. But that's why, in part, the SEC is down, because they don't have a couple of those teams that they can push up, because they're taking care of it themselves by being sliders that slide down.
Yeah, and here's my thing. I don't know if it's me and you discussed this the other day. I can't remember. Concussion, excuse me.
Right.
But I think they should take the conference title, the conference winner from each game, from each
each
of the Power Five, and you take those five and you add one to two more. You give the top team a bye week, and you make the other guys play. And you
see,
make,
I'm either okay with that scenario where you got six, or I'm okay with eight, and then you make sure, without a doubt, you got the eight teams that at least could sniff it and deserve it, and then let them play it out.
I think eight, you start playing in too much of the NFL's time, and they're not going to allow it.
Okay,
but I think the older guys are getting ready for the NFL. Don't want to continue to keep playing when they should be getting prepared for either the Senior Bowl or one of the other games. But at the end of the day is that, and I keep saying about at the end of the day, is you got, if you don't win, I think if you don't, and this is their rule, if you don't win your title, you shouldn't be allowed. I don't care what your schedule looks like and how
you
plays out.
You bring up a very valid point. The best point of all was the fact that those two teams were told that they weren't allowed to sniff it because of the fact that they didn't win their conference outright. So with that being said in itself, then again, it gets down to the weighting of the schedule as well. When you look at who you're going to select, and there's no transparency. They're not telling you the criteria. So the fact of the matter is like when you beat a team like Stanford early in the year when they were seventh in the country, did you beat the seventh-ranked team?
No.
Or at the end of the season when you look at where Stanford finished, you have to reevaluate and go, they weren't that good. They didn't really beat a seventh-ranked team.
Or is Stanford the team that didn't cover the spread
against
Rice?
And we don't know, right? We don't know because we don't know the criteria, and they're not transparent. They're not telling us.
No.
So we're left to assume. But at the end of the day, the waters become muddier and more polluted than they do crystal clear.
No question.
There you have it. Hey, we've got plenty more to talk about. Carl, I know you want to chime in about your team. You've already done enough on Twitter, but we see you there. So if you want to be a part of the discussion, 713-780-ESPN, or you can hit us up on Twitter. We're here till 4, ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Travis Johnson, powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life.
Some people shop at Whole Foods. Some people like Kroger or Randall's. Whole Foods are more organic. I prefer Randall's or Kroger because I'm telling you what, the conversations we have in a break are questions that I need answers.
Yeah.
And when I have questions, you have answers, and therefore it's stuff that I think that the listeners would like to get to, and so I'm going to try and get to it today. Even if we may not get to all the conversation that everybody else has been getting with all day on Tom Herman, we can always get to that. But there's some good stuff out there that we need to talk about. Before we do that, we need to clear some phone lines up. Carl, let's not make it a marathon, but we know and we've already given you lots of love today. But what's up when you want to, you're still bitter about Michigan and your big blue against Ohio State?
Yeah, I'm not going to dwell on that. But, you know, you're talking about the whole, you know, playing in a conference championship and going. Now, if I'm not mistaken, in 2009, LSU lost their last two games, ended up playing in the Sugar Bowl, which is basically a home game for them, which was for the BCS title. You know, you saw what the ratings were for the Michigan-Ohio State game. I've said it for the last month. You know, everybody wants to see Harbaugh and Saban. I still believe they're somehow going to try to get Michigan into this game.
Yeah.
To have a Harbaugh saving contest.
I think that, and Carl, we appreciate you calling.
It's not out of the possibility.
It's not out of possibility, but you know what the crazy part is? They're actually talking right now. It looks like Florida State and Michigan are looking like projected to play each other in the Orange Bowl. But and I would love that because I grew up a diehard Michigan fan. When I say diehard, diehard Michigan fan.
I don't like that.
And I would love to see that matchup.
But here's the thing, like SC, if SC ends up or Washington could slip up in their conference championship game,
yeah.
And they would have no problem kicking them to the curb as quick as possible.
Yeah, no question.
Because they know it's a bigger draw with the other teams that are in the mix.
It definitely is. And so I could see, you know what? I think right now the playoff committee wants two Big Ten teams in there. Me and my pop were having this conversation. My dad brought this up the other day and was like, they want these two teams in. They're going to do whatever they can to do get these two teams in.
I think that they know, regardless of how they finish the season, that the matchup they want at the end is Alabama and Ohio State. I think in their mind.
And Ohio State will get drugged by Alabama once again.
We'll see. I just think that's the matchup they want. But to your point, they would love Michigan in there as well for a lot of reasons, including Harbaugh and Michigan back on the scene and everything. And it's not out of the realm of possibilities. And yet, you and I have said over and over again the other thing that we saw coming. that no one else wanted to listen to was that, whether you call it backdooring or whatever, that both of our teams were going to play their cards right, yeah. Whether they got into the Final Four or not. They were going to be in a New Year's Six.
Yeah.
And right now, it ain't that far-fetched.
It's not that far-fetched at all. You know, we talked about this weeks ago when Florida State lost to North Carolina. Or was it Clemson? Whatever game we lost third. When we lost to Clemson, which is our second game we lost during the season, y'all lost to, I want to say Michigan.
We lost to Ohio State and Michigan.
Y'all lost to Michigan. And I think at the time we were ranked 13 and 14, I think it was, or 12.
Both teams were in the
11.
Teens. Yep.
They're right there in the teens. And one thing we said, and when we looked at the who were in front of us.
And the schedule.
And the schedule, we were saying, if Florida State and Wisconsin play, Wisconsin plays it right, they could backdoor into the playoffs for one, because they'd have been one lost team, two lost teams at the time. It could have backdoored into the playoffs, because at the end of the day, they would have been 3-4 because everybody else lost and they were the hot team.
Everybody scoffed at us, going, "No way, no way." It's sitting there on the on deck circle and it's all teed up, ready to be driven out of the park.
And Florida State lost, so they're not in the playoff talks. But they're in the New Year's Six talk.
Yeah. And again, much like Carl said, you could end up playing Michigan.
Yeah, we could. And that'd be a great game, great turnout, and they travel well.
James, you want to get in on this real quick before we switch topics again? What's up?
Yeah, hey, thanks for taking my call. Real quick, correct me if I'm wrong, the only way that it's going to be any different than four games is if they're going to, because you said earlier that if they go to six, then yeah, you would support that, but if they're not going to eight, because that's going to impede on the NFL season. But if you go to six, there's three games. If it's eight, it's three games. It doesn't make any difference. So either they're going to stay at four or they're going to eight at the end.
They're
the
considering
NFL.
Both. Yeah, I've heard that they're considering going to eight and or six.
And that, it wouldn't be bad. I think if you do it, you have to figure out a way. Yeah, it'd be three games, but that's still a whole other week where guys aren't training for the draft or guys aren't getting prepared. I think if you do it, I think you have to start the football season a week earlier.
And you got, which I'm okay with getting rid of the cupcakes on the schedule too, because a real team is a real team.
Go ahead, finish up before.
I'm tired of seeing big time top five conference schools play Mother Teresa School of the Blind at a time, either at the start of the season or in the middle of the season, when in fact you want the best teams to play out the best schedules to end up being in the best discussion at the end of the year.
Well, I kind of disagree. We've been disagreeing all day today, so it's nothing new. Is the fact that those smaller schools need that money. Those smaller schools need that money to continue to function and continue to play and continue to get scholarships. You know, to be honest,
I get that, and it pays them a lot of money.
It pays them a lot of money. And to be honest with you, I would love to see them play more HBCU colleges, more historically black colleges.
But here's my thing: to get right what we're talking about, to make sure we have a clear cut. Not only a clear cut winner, but the best teams involved, and no one gets screwed. Then sometimes you might have to eliminate them.
Well, no, I think you can still find out without having those things. I think to me the greater good of the college football game is in them playing those teams. And like I said, I wish they would play more black colleges, historically black colleges, because those are teams also that need the money in order to keep. And you have to be able, because
about get the system right to get the best teams, so that at the end of the year we don't look at it and go, man, so-and-so's got screwed and they didn't get in.
But if everybody's playing a patsy, which everybody right now is playing a patsy, if everybody's playing one or two games and they're playing right now, the college football game, they're playing 12, 13 games.
Yeah.
So if you're playing two patsies, you remember back in the day, you played 10 games, that's how much they played. But if you play two garbage teams or two black college teams or two small division college teams, if you play those two games and everybody's playing two of them, then it's still on a fair playing field.
All right. We got a long way to go and a short time to get there, and there's going to be some things that we're not going to get done. That's going to bother me because there was a lot of good conversation, and then we have to hold them all the way to Friday for you. But we'll try and get to as much as possible in our last segment because we've got Tom Herman's deal, your boy Coach O's deal that I want to get to, and then I want to, if possible, get to what we were talking about in the break because it was some good stuff in the NFL game about how much you have to change your playbook, your audibles, and your things when a guy that was on your team goes to another team. We'll try to get all that. But before we do, I want to tell you about Houston Can's Cars for Kids program. It's a phenomenal program, and the reason why it's a phenomenal program is you. If you have an old car, boat, trailer, RV, motorcycle, whatever it is, it's not working anymore. Maybe it is, but you just want to get rid of it. You've been debating whether you're going to put it up for sale, and you just haven't had the time. Well, this is what you do. Instead of just selling it outright and trying to get the cash, get that same amount of money in a tax deduction. All you do is pick up the phone, call 713-225-4226, or get online to HoustonCarsForKids.com. You get them on the phone. You tell them you got something that you want to give them and donate for a tax deduction. So in the process of doing that, that's all you need to do, and you're done. They will do the rest. They do the paperwork. They come with a tow truck. They'll tow it away if it doesn't work, but one way or another, they'll pick it up from you, and they'll get you the tax deduction. And then on top of everything else, you not only feel good about that because you got rid of that clunker, but now you realize you're also making a difference, because what Houston Can's Cars for Kids program does is they take kids that maybe didn't do the right thing with their first opportunity to have a success story and to get through school and do the things they need to do to be successful in life, and they give them a second chance. Whether that is book money because they don't have enough money for books, or they need eyeglasses, or maybe a bus pass. All the things that they need, including even a warm meal so that they can think and go to school with a clear conscience and a clear head and a full belly so that they can do what they need to do to be successful. Well, that's what Cars for Kids is going to do. They translate and turn whatever you donate into an opportunity for a child in the Houston area, and that is a fantastic deal. You mentioned that you heard it on ESPN 97.5. They'll even make sure that they take care of you even better, but at the same time, they're going to take great care of you. They're going to take great care of that clunker, and they're going to make a difference in the Houston community for kids that need a second chance. 713-225-4226, HoustonCarsForKids.com. Right off the car, not the kid.
You know, it's my wife's birthday today.
I did know that because I wished her happy birthday on Facebook.
Yeah, my wife's birthday today, and my son's birthday is tomorrow. Deucey's birthday tomorrow, so I want to wish y'all a happy birthday. I love y'all. Thank you for listening. I know he's listening. He should be out of school now, so he's probably excited about it, man. So, you know, it's going to be a good day, man.
Looking to meet both those fine people and work with Deuce on a little baseball. That'd be fun.
No question. No question, man. I love y'all, and I appreciate y'all.
Happy birthday to both y'all, and thank you for being a big part of the show and providing me with the time with the big man in the household who makes it all fun. I'm a little disappointed in myself because we had so much to get to, and we've gotten so passionate on the Texans that we didn't get to all of it. But some of it I think we can still save on a shelf life till Friday when you come back. But there's some stuff that only you can talk about and players that know, and maybe that's something that has some shelf life. So let's get to the most pertinent. The Herman thing, which we talked about over and over again, and I said that win over Louisville could have been the worst loss in the history of the program because of the fact they were going to lose Tom Herman over it. And I really believe that, again, topics we've discussed ad nauseum on this show, I don't think Texas handled the Charlie Strong situation well at all.
No, they didn't.
And I don't think LSU handled their situation very much better.
No.
And I don't think Tom Herman handled it from his perspective very well. And I think that hit played a huge factor in them losing to Memphis because you had enough guys in the locker room. And the way they tweeted after they found out was basically like, you know, we love you and we want you to succeed and good luck at Texas, but you could have handled that differently and at least been a little bit more upfront and honest with
us. I mean, he was caught between a rock and a hard place. I just thought it was hilarious when I forgot who the ESPN reporter was asking him before, like, so are you going to LSU? Like, is it a done deal? And he's sitting there trying to lie with the weirdest, most uncomfortable face in the world.
I saw that. It looks so. Yeah. He looks so uncomfortable.
What did I say to you guys like a week ago? I said, look, the bottom line is Texas isn't going to make a move unless they know that the guy that they want to replace Charlie is available. So don't think for an instant that those conversations aren't going to take place before they make a decision on their head coach.
Well, that's what happened with the LSU stuff was the fact that he wanted to wait and hear from Texas first because he know he wanted to check the money out. So then LSU said, no, we're not going to wait. And Jimbo in tune asked for $75 million.
For how many years?
For 10 years. Jimbo said he wanted 10 years, 7.5 a year, but he wanted 75.
Jimbo ain't dumb because he's got a good deal where he's at.
Yeah, exactly. So he's like, if I'm going to leave here, But see, here's the thing: is I've never told anybody this, but because I kind of didn't want to blow the man's spot up a little bit. But Tom Herman was gone last year to South Carolina. He accepted the South Carolina job and kind of rescinded when they lost to the Citadel last year when he realized they had no talent. And everybody, all of the media people started saying that was the worst head coaching job out there. Tom Herman was going to South Carolina. Wow. And it just so happened he just said, oh, you know what? There is no talent there. But he knows there's talent in Texas. Look,
and I know the Cougar fans are upset because I saw it on social media, because before he was even officially gone, they had changed their tune from singing the praises of a guy that, look, you cannot dispute what he was able to do at Houston for the last 2 years.
But everybody's able to do that.
But all of a sudden, everybody's chiming in. These Cougar fans and these Cougar alums are going, you know what? He's not that good. He lost to SMU. He lost to Memphis. So forget that big win. If he wants to leave, look, that's just spilled milk and they're bitter, okay? And I get it, because they're a stepping stone program. And no one wants to be known as that, but that's what they have become.
When they disbanded the Southwest Conference and they didn't include Rice, they didn't include U of H, they didn't include SMU, they literally destroyed those three programs. Mm-hmm. To where U of H, yes, they're a good program, but like you said, they are a stepping stone franchise. And when you think about it, who hasn't won at U of H? Tony Levine won 9 games, he got fired. Everybody.
Tony Levine, though, consistently wasn't. I mean, look, Briles, Sumlin, Herman, no question.
And you go back to the Andre Ware days. I mean, Andre Ware days. They were still winning games.
Yeah.
You go to all their times, they were always winning games. They're all putting up huge numbers. And even when, you can't sit there and say, oh,
now, let me ask you a question. We got a couple calls waiting, but let me ask you on this before we get to the calls, because you are an expert that you have experience with this. But, and not to say that you would have left a program, but I'm saying you have it because you recruited highly. But what happens now for all the kids that commit to U of H? And part of it was the Herman factor. Can Herman then steal them and take them to UT?
If they have not signed, are they on campus yet?
I don't know. I'm saying what. So when we see that they've signed the letter of intent, so if they're signed, then they're committed.
So here's the thing: you can commit. There's most of these guys verbally commit,
right,
and say they're coming places,
right.
But like a guy, if you just verbally committed and hadn't signed anything, if you've signed a letter of intent, so far you're actually on campus already.
In their mind.
So, they're there already, because signing day is not till February.
Okay.
So, now all the guys that he's been recruiting, all the guys that are U of H recruits that he think can play at UT, he's going to now end up going to sign those guys. And now you got to look at guys like Ed Oliver, if he decides to stay, or he decides, you know what, let me transfer, sit out a year, and play at UT now.
See, I think Ed Oliver is a situation where U of H is lucky because his brother plays there too, so he's probably going to stay. But my concern was more along the lines of Herman, really, as we've highlighted here, opened up the recruiting lines for U of H. They started making some headway. They started bringing some guys in. I'm quite sure he's already had another good recruiting effort to have some guys lined up to sign. What does that do for U of H? More so than having to find a new head coach, but if all of a sudden all these guys that you spent all year recruiting are now going to be able to jump ship?
Well, here's the thing. The beauty of it is most of the guys that U of H is recruiting, UT is not recruiting. You see what I'm saying? Yeah. Like if they've done it the right way.
Lot of people don't want to.
They don't want to admit it.
They don't want to hear that at U of H. But
Ed Oliver was an anomaly. He was the only five-star guy last year.
He's the only five-star guy that they've signed.
But not to sign with a Power 5 team. Yeah. So that in itself was an anomaly. I mean, when you look at him, he's going to go out, and really, I'm more concerned because he's thinking about taking one of our top recruiters from Florida State, and Tim Brewster, who was at UT at one point. He wants to bring him in and make him his top recruiting guy. So, I mean, he's going to shake up college football a lot, because not just by his salary, whatever they're giving him, but by his assistant coach pool, he's going to be able to play a lot of good names.
I was going to say, people. So you see both coordinators from U of H going with him?
Probably.
And the only reason why you'd keep one is if they got offered the head job.
That's the only reason why.
That's what I thought. All right, let's get to these calls. TJ, you've been waiting. What's up?
Going on, guys.
What's up?
What's up? Yeah, I just got a quick question. They referenced to Charlie Strong talking about the pressure of being the coach at UT, and Herman was asked, do he feel the pressure? He's like, pressure is when you're unprepared. Do you think there's a slight and strong, or it's just him being a little cocky? I just want to hang up.
Well, I mean, one thing is that is Tom Herman was born with a better paint job than Charlie Strong. So that pressure didn't come from from that. When you go to UT and from the time you get the job, first thing they do is basically call you a boy and say you're good enough to be a coordinator, not the head coach. And Charlie Strong is a dang good coach and has always been a good coach. And the reason why he took this job is because he has all of those tools in place. Yep. If Charlie Strong hadn't done his job with all his freshmen and sophomores, I promise you Tom Herman wouldn't have went there.
Any scenario you see where Charlie Strong gets offered the U of H job? Because I think it'd be a great hire.
It'd be a great hire, and it'd be a chance for him to come another level down and build that program back up
in a level that he's won at. When he had Louisville. I think that could be a possibility. Scott, you're the big Coug.
It's under the Louisville level. Come on now, let's be real. Louisville's still a Power 5 team now.
ACC, all right. Scott, I know you want to chime in on your Cougs. What's up, man?
Not much, man. The big fear is that Herman's going to take the ones he's recruited now. Now there's no 5-stars, but, you know, there's going to be some good recruits to go.
Right.
My biggest fear is that we can't back up this. I mean, look down the line. Art Briles, Kevin Sumlin, Herman. You know, we've all got some really good guys. I'm really afraid that we can't pull the next biggest guy and hope, at least for the alumni, that he's going to stay and do something. They're talking about Dana Halverson. Why would Dana leave the Big 12 to come to a Group 5 school?
He's not.
No, he loved Houston, but he ain't leaving a Big 5 conference to come to Houston.
Here's the thing, Scott, and we appreciate your call, is the fact that just like they got Tom Herman, they're going to get another up-and-coming big-name assistant coach.
Coordinator.
To be a coordinator to come in here that wants to be a head coach. And so U of H is going to be fine. Are they going to hire Applewhite? I mean, are they going to hire Major to be here? It's a possibility.
I think they are. The only thing that's hurting him, which is helping U of H, is his past indiscretions off the field.
It's his past of debauchery that they had going on in Austin.
Right.
And that's the thing. I don't know if they were going to even allow him to come back on campus,
which is why, again, if you're U of H, you realize that you can get him. You could probably get him on the cheap because of the fact that he can't go with Herman, or I don't know if he could or not, but it's probably not going to be looked on favorably. So interesting to find out how that scenario plays out. I feel bad for U of H. I really like Tom Herman.
And here's the other thing.
You can't feel bad. You can't have any animosity towards Tom Herman, because the fact of the matter is, if you were in the same situation,
you'd leave too.
You would leave too. And especially if it's your dream job. If there's a dream job and you had it and you had the opportunity to take it, but everybody that you're leaving would call you a traitor, you take that moniker every single time to be able to have the job that you always wanted, and that's what Tom Herman did. So I don't fault Tom Herman. I congratulate him for what he was able to do at University of Houston. I'm sad to see him go. Now my biggest concern is for U of H, and I hope that they can find a guy that can at least carry on and pick up the torch where it's been left, because the bar has been set a little higher with Tom Herman's stay at Collin Boulevard. Yes?
No question. The bar has always been high at that job. You're expected to win while you're there.
But it's higher now because of what he was able to do against big-time, highly-ranked competition.
Yes.
Trav, we had so much more to get to. That's why we got to wait till Friday. That's why you got to stay with us the rest of the week, and we'll get to it on Friday. Can't wait to do the show with Trav on Friday, where we're going to start talking about things like the question that I wanted to ask him today that I want you guys to sit and stew on and ask questions about it, too. What happens when you got a guy on your roster in the NFL and suddenly you let go of him? He ends up on a team that you're going to play later in the schedule or in your division. How much changes goes in from the audibles to the playbook to just signals and signs? And how does that all work? That'd be interesting to break down. That's what you got to look forward to when Travis gets with us again on Friday. But for now, as always, my friend, we will talk, but I'm glad that you've been here.
Yes, sir. Had a great time.
Nick, as always, great job.
Awesome,
and
man.
For Tony and Tom, save until tomorrow. We'll be back. Barry will be with me. We're here every day, Monday through Friday, 1 to 4 p.m., and we love doing this for you, so please be a part of the show. ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.